would you tell me your name and your official job title, please?
Sure. My name is Brad Radu. I'm a professor of medicine, and I hold an endowed chair in tobacco harm reduction research at the University of Louisville.
Wonderful. Now, from what I understand, Doctor, you said in your presentation in Vancouver that total nicotine and tobacco abstinence is unattainable and unnecessary for many smokers. What do you mean by that?
Well, in the U.S., we have 45 million smokers, and 443,000 of them, according to the CDC, die every year from diseases such as lung cancer, emphysema, and heart attacks and strokes. In these smokers, abstinence was unattainable, and tobacco harm reduction basically involves the substitution by inveterate smokers of vastly safer smoke-free alternatives.
And those smoke-free alternatives are e-cigarettes and spit-free smokeless tobacco?
Well, exactly. Those smoke-free alternatives involve things like e-cigarettes, smokeless tobacco products. Yeah, in essence, what you said was correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, remind us, what are e-cigarettes?
Well, e-cigarettes are a relatively new development. They involve tubes of nicotine solution that are vaporized by a small heating element. And essentially, they deliver nicotine in a vapor form to users.
What I understand about reading some highlights of your presentation in Vancouver, I sort of interpret, and tell me if I'm right or wrong, that you're sort of saying, look, we've had this all or nothing approach, that you either smoke and die, or you don't smoke and you live. And you seem to be saying, look, there's a middle way here. There's a third way that we could look at. Is that in the ballpark?
Well, absolutely. And one of the key features here is nicotine. Nicotine is powerfully addictive, but nicotine does not cause any disease. And so we have to rethink how people are using nicotine. Right now, smokers are using the most dangerous form of nicotine by burning tobacco and inhaling smoke. What tobacco harm reduction is about is convincing smokers that they can get what they seek from cigarettes without getting all of the harmful elements that are contained in the smoke.
And remind us again, you make the point it's not the nicotine that's killing people. What is it that's in those cigarettes that is killing people?
When you burn tobacco and inhale smoke, you are also consuming, in addition to nicotine, thousands of other agents that are produced when the tobacco is burned. And it is the consumption of these agents over many, many years that is producing the lung and other cancers, the heart attacks and strokes, and the emphysema. Consuming tobacco and nicotine in electronic cigarettes or smokeless tobacco, you're still getting the nicotine, but you're not getting those other thousands of toxic agents.
Now, I understand that you cite some evidence in at least a couple of European countries that supports your idea that that taking the approach of tobacco harm reduction instead of just total abstinence can really save lives. Can you talk about some of those, what you've seen in Europe?
Well, absolutely. I have, in Sweden, men consume tobacco and nicotine at about the same level as other developed countries, both in Europe and throughout the world. But they consume tobacco and nicotine in the form of snus, which is a Swedish smokeless tobacco product. Now, this has been going on for a couple centuries, and evidence from the WHO shows that Swedish men over the past 50 years have had lung cancer rates that are a fraction of those in other developed countries, primarily as a result of consuming snus instead of cigarettes. And I conducted a research sabbatical there in 2002. I studied these trends, and through a series of research studies published in the medical literature, I was able to show that smoking rates are very, very low in Sweden, and these are due to high consumption of Swedish smokeless tobacco, or high consumption of Swedish snus. And my results have been replicated by other researchers in Sweden. So the Swedish experience is very well documented as reasonably high consumption of tobacco and nicotine, but very, very low disease rates.
When you go, when you present these findings, like in Vancouver, or when maybe you talk to other colleagues, how do people react to what you're saying?
Well, the dominant public health position in the United States is quit smoking and all tobacco products. And so among public health people whose overarching goal is no nicotine and no tobacco, this concept of tobacco harm reduction is not very popular.
You get a lot of pushback. I mean, do you have people come up and, you know, I don't know, yell at you, but, you know, just really give you what for?
Well, yes, there is a lot of pushback among organizations like the American Cancer Society, among many federal organizations, among many federal agencies that have an all-or-nothing approach toward tobacco use. That is, nicotine and tobacco abstinence, or take your chances. And so there is a lot of pushback in the U.S.
From your perspective, I mean, should the U.S. surge in general promote, you know, smokeless tobacco? If it could save as many lives as it seems, you know, what you're saying and what the research shows, you know, should there be more of an effort at that level maybe to communicate the benefits of smokeless tobacco?
Well, we know from long experience in the U.S., that an abstinence-only approach simply does not work. We've had this all-or-nothing campaign now for well over 40 years. The Surgeon General's report in 1964 marks the beginning of an all-or-nothing campaign, and we still have 440,000 deaths. So it is time for public health authorities in the U.S. to look at a tobacco harm reduction option, because we know it works in Sweden. We now have evidence that it works in Norway. And we do have evidence here in the U.S. that, especially among men, that they have switched from cigarette smoking to smokeless products. And when they do so, they lower their risks.
Now, as I understand, you have a background in dental and oral pathology. Is the smokeless tobacco the sort of things you're recommending? Is that better for a person's dental health as opposed to regular cigarettes?
Switching from cigarettes to smokeless tobacco lowers risks for all diseases, and that includes a lot of the dental diseases that you just referred to. There is no risk that is elevated when a smoker switches from cigarettes to smokeless tobacco.
Wonderful. So what's next, Professor? Or is there anything on the horizon? Is there maybe another study that's being done? Or is there anything that you feel like could be like a game changer, you know, something that could maybe that's in the works? Like I say, I don't know if there's a move underway or another, some research in the U.S. that might really, you know, get people's attention and have them consider this something other than the all or nothing approach that you've talked about?
Well, our goal right now is to find ways to educate smokers in a responsible manner about safer products. once Americans know that smoking has very high risks, and most American smokers are aware of the high risks of smoking, but they're completely uneducated about the vastly lower, they are completely uneducated about the vastly lower risk profile of smoke-free products. And to put this in perspective, Americans use automobiles. They know the risks of automobile use, and yet we still drive our automobiles every day. They are not aware that smokeless tobacco use has a risk magnitude in the same range as automobiles. That is, lifetime use of smokeless tobacco products basically as at the same risk level as automobile use. And so if Americans are aware of that, that they can get the satisfaction they seek from using smokeless tobacco instead of cigarettes, but they realize that the risks are about the same as driving an automobile, they will switch in large numbers to smokeless tobacco products. A study done in 2006 showed that if we responsibly communicate the risks of smokeless tobacco to cigarette smokers, as many as 4 million of them will switch right away. So we do have this challenge to educate smokers and will help them live longer and healthier lives.
Can you paint a picture of what that would mean if that happened, if that education took place, if that number of smokers switched that you just mentioned? Talk about the impact that would have on the American public health system.
Well, 4 million smokers switching will, within 3 to 5 years, they'll have lower risks for heart attack and strokes. Within a slightly longer time, they'll start to have lower risks for cancer and emphysema. Smoker switching will impact the American healthcare system. And by the way, I mean, off the record, I can provide you with that study and that press release from that study if you're interested. I mean, anything I'm telling you, I can provide scientific evidence. This isn't speculation. This is solidly based in science. And the AAAS, as you may know, is a very prestigious scientific organization. So my presentation of this information there, it has to have a solid scientific basis. And that's what I'm willing to provide to you if you need it.